T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Barstool Sports, Seb, had a post a couple days ago. And they, during this pandemic, you know, kind of forecasting what the worst case scenario would be, which is that this just turns into every man for himself, all 350 million people in the United States, every man, woman, and child for himself, essentially an equivalent of the Hunger Games. The folks at Barstool divided up the country into 13 districts, as they do in the Hunger Games, in the movies.
Yes.
Yeah. And divided it up regionally and then sort of handicapped the whole thing here. I guess I'll start with you. Are there certain parts of the country that, if you were handicapping a United States 13 district Hunger Games, are there certain parts of the country that are essentially the equivalent of like an FCS school that would just get snowed over the first 2 weeks of September, that kind of thing?
You know, my first gut instinct was the Northeast for sure would have a rough time with that. For one, New York has the lowest percentage of its population that are military veterans in the union of the 50 states. I didn't look into Puerto Rico on this, but New York has the lowest percentage of military veterans. So I feel by sheer training alone, the state with the largest population in the Northeast would suffer. And then you also have, you know, the intellectuals of New York City and whatnot, kind of feeble intellectual bodies, not quite trained for combat the way, say, the oil and gas workers of Houston, even the office workers in oil and gas down in Houston, I think are going to be better prepared than the office workers of the financial district of New York. So I think the Northeast is going to get screwed. I will say there's one weird district on here, which is it's Kansas. Where is this? It's really hard. They didn't really break this. It's Kansas and Nebraska. So Kansas and Nebraska, just by population alone, I don't know how Kansas and Nebraska is going to make it. They would simply get overrun. They might be very skilled fighters and whatnot. Maybe they've been built up by their corn farming, but there's just not enough of them. I think they'd get overrun pretty easily. Those are the two districts that would hurt the most.
Yeah. That's District 8 on the map here. And they're not, they call them the Denver Nuggets of this map. They may make some noise here and there, but the end, they will truly never be in the mix to win at all.
Well, I got to ask, who's the moron that put this together? Because he thought that this District 8 is almost entirely in Nebraska and Kansas. It touches a little sliver of northeastern Colorado. And he said, well, I assume Denver is in this district. I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, that's funny.
So this guy, the guy that wrote this is definitely he can't be a general in this campaign.
No, nor a geography teacher. Not good. I would say that's interesting because they handicapped the Northeast as actually being one of the districts that has a really good chance to win the thing. And here's what they say. New York, Boston, and Philly are scumbag central, a massive group of people that have dealt with, I'll say, crappy winters and paying high prices for the right to experience those crappy winters while living in overcrowded areas for their entire life. If iron sharpens iron, District 13 is a sword ready to do damage. However, there's just as good a chance the combatants of District 13 kill each other instead of their opponents due to disagreements about sports teams. Keep in mind, this is not just New York. District 13 is New York, Eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New England.
Yeah, I think
there's
the level of
infighting. There's more likely
to
be a civil war.
Yeah, that's, you know what, it would be exactly like when we try to, when imperial powers try to like draw up arbitrary borders in their colonies. You'd be like, here, Iraq, I know you've been all these different tribes and or cultural groups for so many years, but now you're all one big country. Good luck with that. And then we leave, yeah. And then we're shocked when it doesn't work out that way. It would be ugly in the Northeast. I will say, I think that the Florida region, it's actually not the Florida region. It's pretty much the Gulf Coast and the Southeast coastal region. And then they also included the shaft of Florida, the dangling participle there. So I would say they might have a pretty good shot at it just because Florida, Texas, and California have the most military veterans per capita. California is bisected. The northern part of it is in the Pacific Northwest region, and then there's a southern region. So they get split in half. Florida has a whole lot of military veterans, as does the Gulf Coast. Plus, they've got a whole lot of meth. And
yeah.
this is what the Nazis did in World War II. Hitler had them all hopped up on prescription methamphetamine. And as they were rolling over their blitzkriegs and whatnot, they were fueled by speed, like literally fueled by speed. And I think Florida would have that going for them in the initial parts of the fighting. I don't think they'd have the staying power to ultimately be there at the end. They'd be all bedraggled. They'd have lost all their teeth to the meth mouth. But they might be one of the final three or four.
I feel like Florida, maybe not weather-wise, Seth, but I feel like Florida is the closest thing to the White Walkers in Game of Thrones, where it's just a bunch of meth-addled zombies coming in, and they're just trying to, you know, ultimately they won't win, but boy, they're going to be a pain in the ass to deal with, and they have no neurosensory or no soul or anything like that. They're just crossing over into all these other states and just chewing people's faces off because of the meth.
No sense of pain or remorse. But this does also include the New Orleans and the pretty much half of like Louisiana, which they're drunk a lot, you know? And I don't know if you can trust the Cajuns to sustain themselves without a steady supply of liquor through all these Hunger Games and however long they might last.
I feel like the Cajuns are the most likely ones to cut a deal with District 11, which is what we're in, because they just want their jambalaya and their beer. And they just want to sit on their porch and not have to deal with the fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they just want to live their good old Southern Louisiana lifestyle. Now, I think the favorite, and this is not to brag because you and I live in this region, but boy, it's really hard to see any of these other regions beating District 11. It's almost like whoever created this map voluntarily created the combination of the Golden State Warriors of the last 5 years, the Alabama football program with Bill Belichick as the general of the entire army, because they've got Texas. They've got basically the footprint of the entire SEC going through northern Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, the entire state of Georgia, other than the coast, all the way up
a little sliver of Virginia.
Tennessee.
I think Texas and Oklahoma itself should have been, just because of the population, the retired military population, all of that. I feel like Texas and Oklahoma should have been its own separate district. You take Texas and Oklahoma and then add all those southern states to them, including North and South Carolina, the number of retired military vets in those states, plus just the sheer, like sometimes, you know what, sometimes some of those people in the backwoods of some of those southern areas, you know, in North Carolina and Alabama and whatnot, sometimes they're so stupid, they're smart. Like, so when it comes to not knowing what they can't do in a war, I feel like they'd be particularly adept at just like the bonsai charge and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm looking, if I'm going to have to be part of this army, I'm going to have to get a lot more steps in.
Brandy's concerned about your health.
What's that?
Brandy is concerned about your health. When she heard you talking the other day about how you were going to get a snack during each commercial break and that you've only taken 690 steps during the day, all those steps, like all of those steps that you took yesterday were done while procuring a snack, that she's a little bit nervous about your blood sugar.
Okay. Well, I just want to be clear about one thing. Two things I want to be clear of. Three, actually. Brandy, thank you for being concerned. I wonder if Brandy's more concerned than Amy right now. That would be interesting. Number two, the snacks I've been going to get, a lot of them have been fruit. So I'm being somewhat nutritious. Okay. So there's that. B or C, I guess this is number three, is I actually had been kind of been able to do the intermittent fasting thing when you and I were in studio. Cause it was, you know, there's nothing for you and I to eat up there. So I would just make sure I don't eat on the ride in, and I would get there. And by the time we're done with our post-show meeting at like 10:30 or whatever, I've made it almost to lunchtime without eating. And Seth, I've dropped like 18 pounds since football season was over.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize you'd stuck up. You'd kept up with that. Oh, good for
well,
you.
Well, until I got sequestered in my own home. And now I'm, as you, to your point, I'm grazing constantly.
It's hard to do. It's hard to do. You know what? Splitty, Loophole Splitty is suggesting that we do this by Houston districts. Who would win the Hunger Games with Houston districts? I hesitate to do that. I might have to gerrymander it to make it more desegregated. I don't want to turn this into a race war between the third ward and Spring.
Right.
Because I feel like that's ended up like or somehow, you know, we'd have to be sure that we kind of try to cut across racial lines with this. This could easily turn into the Mexicans versus the African Americans versus the whites. And I don't want that. I don't need that kind of heat during the coronavirus quarantine.
I don't blame you. All right. So we'll have to evaluate that off air. But Splitty, it's a great idea. Hunger Games throughout the city of Houston.
But that could ultimately come to good. Gerrymandering to be more inclusive of all the races.
Right.
You know, let's put a good spin on gerrymandering for once.
That's right. That's right. Gerrymandering gets a bad rap. Let's do it for good. All right. Well, tell Brandy thank you for being concerned about my health, but I'm going to be okay. I had twice as many steps yesterday as I did the day before. Of course, the day before I had a pathetic number of steps, but it's a spinnable story, Seth. I had twice as many. I hope to go exponential again today. You know what? I'm taking a walk today. That's what I'm going to do.
You're going to use the logarithmic curve. What do you, are you, when you're tracking the coronavirus, are you a log scale guy or a numeric scale guy?
Dude, you know what's funny is I'm looking at my steps for like the last 2 weeks, and the 2 days, I'm going to tell you what, Seth, the 2 days that Amy and I were at Disneyland look like the numbers for the Payne and Pendergast podcast on that grid where they're just way, way above everybody else.
Yeah, there you go. It's just keep doubling it every day and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I guess. I was really tired those 2 days though. It was the day after those 2 days, not many steps. Radio.com Rewind, smart speakers, streaming on the web, sportsradio610.com. All ways that you can listen to not just our show, but all of the great shows here on Sports Radio 610. The Radio.com app is the best. And as a lot of you are finding out, we get new people telling us every day on Twitter or on the text page, man, I didn't realize that you can rewind to the beginning of the shows. People really, really dig that feature. So if you haven't yet, go download the Radio.com app and stick with us throughout the day as we will keep you informed, entertained, and so forth. Has the coronavirus actually made the NCAA more self-aware? That would be a miracle. We'll talk about it next. We're reminded, Seth, on the text page that only one man and one woman are chosen from each district. That may be my project for today. I may need to take a look at these 13 districts and see which one man and one woman would get picked to defend those districts or to represent those districts in the Hunger Games. Because boy, there would sure be a lot in the district that we live in. There'd be a lot just in Houston.
It sounds like people are taking that exercise a little too literally, as if we are actually planning a serious Hunger Games. Look, you're allowed to bend the rules a little bit when it's a completely fictitious experiment. This is going to be population against population. This is going to be all out war for supremacy of our, what would ultimately be Texas's manifest destiny, which is
of
the
course.
Entire nation would be called Texas from the West Coast to the East Coast. The sun would, the sun would rarely set on the Texas Empire.
From sea to shining sea, yes.
Yeah, it would take a little while to get to Hawaii, but we'd get there. And then eventually we'd have pretty much the whole damn hemisphere.
Text message. I love you, Pender Fast, and your beautiful lies. No, for real. I've actually lost weight. Like that's a true story.
You have, and you did. But, I didn't realize you'd kept up with the fasting, but we did talk about that a while back.
We did, and it's. But that again, Seth, it's more a function of our job being able to help keep me to that than it is me waking up and going, okay. Let's count the hours down until 11 o'clock and let's stop eating at 7 o'clock. I'm good at the stop eating thing at 7 because I don't like to go to bed real full and stuff like that. But It is harder here. Like, Amy's out there cooking breakfast some mornings here. Like, the house smells like bacon sometimes. Our office, our studio never smells like bacon up at Sports Radio 610.
Bacon will do you in every time. Bacon or fresh baked bread. That's why when you go to the grocery store hungry, you got to stay away from the bakery. And sometimes that's not enough. The bakery is the same way the smoking section used to be. Remember when there were smoking sections in restaurants and they'd seat you like right next to the smoking section where there might be a small low barrier between you and the smokers? It's like restaurants didn't understand the way actual smoke works. Like, oh, don't worry, you're in the non-smoking section over here. But that's what the bread smells like in a grocery store. You get that bread wafting over to you, and it makes you hungry.
It's hard to stay away from it too. It's a dominant aroma inside a grocery store.
I lived right next to a bakery for a spell of time once, and it was the hardest year of my life in terms of my diet, because I'd smell that first thing in the morning. You'd wake up and you smell that fresh baked bread, and it would kind of linger. I think they'd keep baking through about 9 a.m. and it was just about impossible to not gorge every single morning.
Were you a player or were you retired?
I was retired. I was going through one of my many up and down cycles in my yo-yo that is my body weight.
They plunk you next to a bakery.
Yeah.
So this is a story yesterday, Seth, that actually started out with a lot of people going, oh, way to go, NCAA, nice job, and actually has a decent ending to it here. But Trevor Lawrence, who is not just a heavy favorite, it would be a shock if Trevor Lawrence, even coming off of an average year, wasn't the number one overall pick in the 2021 draft. He has a girlfriend named Marissa Mowry who plays soccer at Anderson University. And so they're both athletes. They're both NCAA athletes. And there are obviously people searching for ways to help to make a difference during the coronavirus outbreak. And Trevor Lawrence and his girlfriend are two of those people. And they had started a GoFundMe account to help raise money to help people who have been affected by the coronavirus. And the state, which is one of the publications down in the South Carolina, out in the Carolinas, reported on Tuesday that Clemson's compliance department had asked Lawrence to end the campaign. So Clemson's compliance people with the NCAA, I don't even know that they check with the NCAA. They just said, hey, we need to shut that down, just because they've seen how the NCAA reacts to some of this stuff. The NCAA actually reached out to Clemson's athletics department shortly after that story was published and told the school that Lawrence's intentions were good and his campaign could continue. Seth, between this and the NCAA saying they're going to give all these athletes who had their seasons ended or canceled altogether because of the coronavirus outbreak, saying they'll get their eligibility back, is it possible that the coronavirus has actually knocked some self-awareness into the NCAA?
The NCAA is a kinder, gentler NCAA, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe they would have shot themselves in the foot by now, and they haven't yet. So I got to hand it to them. I think they've been a pleasant surprise during this coronavirus that they've actually handled these things well, not sounding or appearing completely and totally tone deaf. There's still room. Look, there's still time. And I would imagine, especially because athletes are going to be so active on social media during all of this because they've got nothing but downtime to sit around and, I don't know, maybe take class. Oh, this will be where it gets interesting, Sean. If athletes are finishing their classes via distance learning and then taking classes via distance learning, it's obviously become a much larger part of our culture, so it's not unfamiliar to the NCAA that athletes are using distance learning. But I wonder if some of these schools start pushing the envelope in terms of what kind of classes they're offering or whether guys are actually doing the work or something. We might still yet see some scandals out of this coronavirus quarantine.
And that's funny you say that. My kids, as I've mentioned, I have three in college right now, and they're all at relatively big universities that have, like everybody else, have shut down their classroom and they're doing everything virtual. All three of my kids have weighed in, Seth, on what it's like to do the classes online. They're basically in these gigantic GoToMeeting and Zoom rooms, taking these classes where the teacher is doing the lecture on a big chunk of their screen. And I don't know, I have no idea if there's a bunch of little miniature screens for everybody who's in the class, if they're somehow taking attendance that way. All three of my kids are like, this sucks. This is terrible. And it's funny because If you just told me as a college student, you don't have to leave the apartment to take your class, I would have been like, are you kidding me? I might actually go to class now if I could do that. So they've all three of mine have weighed in and said, this is terrible. Like it's awful.
That's really interesting. Cause I've taken classes online and I was doing it like over 10 years ago at BYU. Actually, BYU had one of the earlier bigger programs for online distance learning. And I think it was partly born out of the fact that because, you know, the Mormon church is really good at communicating with a lot of people all over the world and then of course recruiting them. But I loved it. I thought it was awesome because you could go at your own pace. Now that's the difference. I was always taking online classes where you could go at your own pace. So then if you feel like, oh, I'm going to binge my way through microeconomics this week, you could do it. Your kids are stuck at the same schedule. So if anything, it's almost, they almost feel like the cold sting of restrictions on their time because they're at home, but they have to be in front of the television or in front of the computer. I feel for you.
Yeah.
I feel for your poor children and this plight they're going through.
Right. People are listening right now. Like your poor kids, all three who go to private schools are really, boy, they're the real heroes in this whole pandemic, Sean. The ones who are able to muscle their way through Econ 301 for 50 minutes in front of their computer. No, I get it. It's something everybody's experiencing right now who's in college. They're all having to do this for the first time. You know, Seth, it's funny. I got the TV on in my office here. They've got one of the lawyers. They've got a divorce lawyer on up there talking to the anchor on the news show that I'm watching, talking about the impact on the divorce rate by the coronavirus.
Oh, well, that's one of – who was it? Captain Ron from Battle Red Blog asked, how do we think that – he asked us how we thought that the divorce rate might be affected and the birth rate. And the immediate thing I thought, maybe because I'm a child of a broken home, Sean, is what about all these people who are going to conceive a child while simultaneously realizing that they don't want to be with their spouse anymore? That days 1, 2, and 3, it's super romantic. We got time on our hands. By day 10, 11, 12, it's like The Shining. And yet, the seed has been sown, and if you know, 9 months later, mom and dad aren't together anymore because they realized they hated each other during the quarantine. I think that might happen a lot. So I think the birth rate is going to go up, but I think the divorce rate, I think some people might decide that they chose the wrong partner or something during this break. So maybe the divorce rate and the birth rate both go up.
Yeah. If you just pick 20 random married couples, right, that are normal married random couples, you know, just the whatever the average random couple looks like. And let's say random couple without kids, right? Because kids inject a different variable into everything in terms of the amount of time that you spend with your spouse versus having other distractions there. Let's talk about the random couple with no kids in the house. You take 20 of them. What do you think are what percentage, what's going to be a higher percentage? The couple that comes away from this quarantine having spent all kinds of quality time, both intimately and socially together, or couples that are just freaking sick of each other by the end of this thing? Are relationships going to be more improved or deteriorated by the end of this?
I think they're going to be more improved because I think both couples, especially like, let's say it's maybe if one or both of the people in the relationship work, then maybe they'll have a more appreciation for the challenges they face at work. Of course, the opposite of that could be this. It's that all these studies are out there showing how much time people waste at work. So I think there might be some people who are at home this week who have been telling their spouses for years, like how crazy it is to work and how hectic it is and how little time they have for things. And then their spouse is going to realize, you just did a full day's work in 3 hours. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Which is, it's possible.
It's my guess is that's happening with a lot of people, not people like you and me, Seth, because we're grinding on this job 17 hours a day. And we're able to close. I have a reason to have the door closed while I'm working too, you know? So, you know, cause
well, it's pretty clocked. You know, in a lot of ways, I think for as much as people say, oh, you have an easy job, which it is, but it's only, you know, it's only 4 hours a day. Obviously, it's more than 4 hours a day because we're watching games and we're reading articles and we're taking notes. But I would submit that compared to a lot of other office jobs, even by knowing people knowing that we're actually working for those 4 hours a day, we're actually outworking a whole lot of other office workers who are on Facebook a good chunk of the time, who are gossiping at the office cooler. Now people with actual real jobs, like physical jobs, you got to work the whole damn day, and yes, there's nothing you can do about it sometimes. If you're out working in the field or something, everybody knows when your time's actually accounted for.
All right. So as we head into the final segment here, let's just take a quick inventory. We are literally a week into free agency. Like 1 week ago today is when free agency officially started. What is left on the Texans shopping list? How do we feel about some of the positions that need to be addressed? We will do that. We'll hand it over to In the Loop at the top of the hour. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. Seth, I got an email yesterday from Jimmy Shapiro, who sends out a lot of gambling information. I don't know if you're on the same email list as I am for this type of stuff. Kind of hope not for purposes of what I'm about to ask you. What do you think the Texans' revised season win total is in Vegas right now?
The revised season win total for the Texans, what was it right initially?
It was initially the initial win totals came out on February 7th, so right after the Super Bowl. And the initial total win total was 8.5.
Oh, okay. So how much is a DeAndre Hopkins worth? How much is I don't think typically a DJ Reader, an interior defensive lineman that played 60% of the snaps, wouldn't typically move the line that much. But the Texans haven't really made any notable improvements other than, I would say, arguably Randall Cobb, except it's an improvement after DeAndre Hopkins was already gone, which is a huge deal. I'm going to say that they went down to 7.5.
They're down to 8.
Oh, all right. So it wasn't as huge a difference as we might think. Okay.
They're down to 8. Yeah, typically.
Did you say it was 8.5 or 9.5 they started at?
8.5.
Okay.
All
right.
Yeah, they went down by half a win. So they're 8. So I guess my follow-up question to you would be, what do you take over under 8 wins right now?
I'm going to take the under because I still have reservations about the secondary and the defense in general. I'm excited about Anthony Weaver being the defensive coordinator, but until we see what Lonnie Johnson looks like in year two and what they do in the draft, and this is where I am with the draft. Typically with the draft, you want to see, okay, you want to draft guys that are going to be good 3 years from now. It's really hard in the second, third, and fourth rounds to get guys that are going to be good immediately. Sometimes you strike gold. Sometimes you get a guy that is good immediately, but you can't count on it. So I'm going to have to take the under for now until I start to see a little bit more of what the defense is going to look like.
I'm taking the over based solely on two things. One, Deshaun Watson. Two, Bill O'Brien's seemingly naked mole rat-like ability to survive a nuclear war and finish – other than 1 year, finish with 9 wins or better. He's been here 6 years, and he's 9-7 or better in 5 of those 6. He's last year they had a negative point differential, and the dude won 10 games. I'm not saying he's a great coach by any means. To your point that you've made, I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he's okay. I think he's a decent head coach. I think he's been an abysmal general manager, but I think he's a decent enough head coach to where if he still has Deshaun Watson healthy for 16 games, he'll find a way to win 9 of them. He always does.
Bill O'Brien is a dependable four-door sedan as a football coach, I think. I think that he generally runs a tight ship, and he gets his teams to play with discipline for the most part. Do they play up to their full capacity? I don't think that they have offensively over the last few years, but he does that. There's no denying that, whether the division is weak or not. Look, there have been one thing you have to remember about the division being weak is that look at those teams and how they have not been able to win the division despite it being a weak division. Bill O'Brien, almost by winning all those divisions, you can say, look, a division title doesn't mean that much, but he has been better than a whole lot of various football coaches and general managers that have cycled through all those organizations. Not as a general manager, but you know what I'm saying. So there is that. It's just a question of, okay, but how far can he ultimately take you and how good can the offense be? So yeah, I think that there's that. There's also, you know, usually what the analytics types will say is that one score games are almost a coin toss. that whether you win or whether you lose a bunch of one-score games, it's just a coin toss because it comes down to a play at the end of the game. It comes down to an interception at the end of the game. The two teams played pretty much equally, and sometimes it's just a matter of dumb luck. I think that Bill O'Brien, over the course of several years, he's now gone past the point of small sample size where I think you can say he's got some kind of knack for winning close games. And he's got some kind of knack for eking out these games, and sometimes maybe games that should be blowouts or closer than they should be in victories, but sometimes games that they should have lost, they figure out a way to win at the end. Deshaun Watson has a lot to do with that. But I think, yeah, because of that, that kind of always tips Bill O'Brien into the positive win column above and beyond where maybe the total quality of the team is. I think I've realized what's happened here, Sean, which is this. I think that sometimes when I talk too long, you actually get disconnected.
Hey.
Because I'm talking too long. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. How are you? I don't know what happened there. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's all right. I should have just kept talking. So anyway, what I was saying was that I think that Bill O'Brien does actually have some kind of skill for winning close games. Usually that's just dumb luck. I think Bill O'Brien has some he's managed to consistently year after year eke out these one score games to the point now where I don't think it's just dumb luck.
Okay, I want to go through here and I want to go through here and look at the positions where they still need to do some things, Seth, but there is this graphic that Pro Football Focus just put up where I'm guessing that they're doing this for every team. Where they're kind of sum totaling the last couple of weeks, and
last
on the left hand
last couple of years.
No. Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, because it goes back to Clowney. Yeah. My bad. So it sounds like you've seen this graphic.
Yeah.
So they're going back through the last couple of years, and they have Texans sent, as in sent out, and they list all the players and the draft picks, and then on the right side of the graphic, they have Texans received, with a list of all the players and draft picks they've received. The funny part about the graphic is the two players that are displayed in between those two columns of data are graphics of people. And they've got a picture of Hopkins kind of looking up at the scoreboard. They've got a picture of Clowney in the middle of a play. His dreadlocks are flying all over the place. Behind both of them, in sort of a grainy kind of faded graphic with a sinister grin on his face, looking right into the camera like a Sith Lord, is Bill O'Brien. Like right over the shoulder of DeAndre Hopkins, as if to say, hey, look at these two guys. Guess who won that power struggle?
Well, and I think the notable thing about this you have to remember is that this is a synopsis of the trades over the past two seasons, and yet it only includes trades that were done by Bill O'Brien because Brian Gain didn't trade squat. So so it all starts with the Jadeveon Clowney. So the players that have been sent out are DeAndre Hopkins, Jadeveon Clowney, and then Martinez Rankin, Johnson Bottomosi, Julion Davenport. I don't think anybody's losing a lot of sleep over those last three, but the DeAndre Hopkins and Jadeveon Clowney are the big ones going out. And then do you want to go over the draft picks that have been sent out first or just talk about the players they've received?
Well, here's what jumps out at me is that if you just did the players for the players and the draft picks for the draft picks, I don't know that I think the Texans lose on both counts. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that there's any permutation you can put together, whether it's the sum total or if you just divide it up. Like, if you took the sum total, Seth, of the players and the picks, and you said, okay, yeah, I mean, they overpaid by sending out Hopkins and Clowney, two of their best four players. But when you do the hokey pokey, turn yourself around and you take everything into account, then I feel a little bit better about this. If you just chop this up and said, we're trading these players for these players and we're trading these draft picks for these draft picks, the Texans get destroyed in both areas. You know what I mean? There's no way to spin the sum total of these things. They sent out two first round picks, a second, a third, a fourth, and a sixth. They're getting back a second, third, two fourths, and a sixth. And with the players, they sent out Hopkins and Clowney, two of the best at their position, and they got back David Johnson, Gary and Conley. Tunsil's a good player, but then Hyde, Stills, Cross, and Mingo, Duke Johnson, a bunch of reserves.
Right, and that's where I think a lot of those draft picks cancel each other out. I mean, some are in different years, so that's not quite the same tit for tat, but The second round picks kind of cancel each other out. The third rounders, the fourth rounders, the sixth round picks. So what it turns into is that when it comes to the draft side of the equation, you've given up two first round picks. So if you boil this down to like the really relevant higher priced assets, the Texans have sent out DeAndre Hopkins, Jadeveon Clowney, and two first round picks. In return, they've received, let's say, David Johnson, Gerrion Conley, Laremy Tunsil, and I guess Duke Stills? Johnson would be one of them. Yeah. But and Stills, yeah, Kenny Stills. So it's a greater quantity of players for sure. And those guys are all, Duke Johnson isn't a starter, and Kenny Stills isn't necessarily a starter. He might start this year, but he wasn't last year. So let's call him a starter. And David Johnson, I suppose. So all of those guys other than Laremy Tunsil aren't on the same level as DeAndre Hopkins or Jadeveon Clowney, but also those two first-round picks, too. You know, Laremy Tunsil is the one covered by those first-round picks.
Yeah, I mean, Hopkins and Clowney would have to get arrested for something in the next week for this stuff to start to make sense. You know what I mean? Clowney's been gone a while, but the Hopkins thing, like that. I get it. Like, if you're just taking the quality of the player and you're looking at it, you go, well, clearly Hopkins and Clowney are better collectively because of the high-end productivity that they give versus a bunch of role players and Laremy Tunsil. But you can explain it away if Hopkins and Clowney were a couple of Antonio Browns, but they weren't. They were just guys who didn't get along with Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. Well, this is what you have, Sean. This is, you know what Pro Football Focus didn't put on there? They should have put Texans receive a better culture. That's what you should have put on there. Quantify that. Stick that in your PFF grade machine. Improved culture.
Good call.
Can't do that, can you?
Yeah. Good call. So
Texans also received Jack Easterby, okay? Quantify that.
For nothing.
Yeah, for nothing. They signed him for nothing. All they had to pay for that was the scorn of Robert Kraft, and that's it.
And the embarrassment of tampering charges. That's it. That's it.
Did they get Nick Caserio? Remind me of that. I can't remember if they got Nick Caserio.
They did not get. Yeah. No, they didn't get Nick Caserio. Unfortunately,
it's weird because they really wanted him enough to tamper.
They did.
You know, allegedly. You're like, the culture king. This is what drives me nuts. The culture king is the guy that's at the center of the tampering scandal. Like Jack Easterby, the team pastor and culture king, is also the one that had to have you publicly retract your pursuit of another team's executive because he allegedly tampered. That's your culture.
Like, he had a foul of the law.
Jack Easterby, like, frantically plotting and scheming in his office after the whole tampering allegation. We're like, I got to figure out a way to pin this on Clowney and D-Hop. It'll just keep nothing to see here. It was all D-Hop. Yeah.
So as we head towards the top of the hour to hand it over to In the Loop, John Lopez and Landry Locker, which positions, Seth, do you still feel skittish about that you think the Texans might address here in the next phase of free agency?
I think in the next phase of free agency, I would really like them to go after somebody that can be an interior pass rusher slash run stuffer. I don't think you have to necessarily replace DJ Reader. DJ Reader is very good at what he does. He's a two down guy that can play on third down, but he's not genuinely a pass rusher. There are other guys out there that you can get that may not be as good as DJ Reader, but you're gonna get more bang for your buck. We talked a little bit earlier about the kid out of Denver, Shelby Harris, that I think is a quality football player. He can rush the passer. He can get some pressure, but he's a very disciplined player. He plays run first. He's not trying to jet upfield. I think if you're in a different scheme, in a more aggressive scheme, he might have ended up having a lot more sacks. So those are the kinds of guys that right now I think he can get. As far as cornerback goes, defensive back, I'm not sure at this point if they go after anybody else in free agency, because they've kind of filled out the lower half of the defensive backfield. And I wonder if just one of those second round picks is almost earmarked for a cornerback right now.
Yeah. Or if they're counting on Lonnie Johnson to take a step this year. I mean, right now that's clearly what they're counting on just based on what the depth chart looks like. And we'll see if they have any moves up their sleeve. Just back to what you were saying about the defensive line, I do feel like one area where the Texans can get some efficiencies on the margins, if you will, at certain positions. And maybe this is one of the reasons why they decided that DJ Reader was only worth $9 million instead of $13 million is Anthony Weaver. Because as we've seen, the defensive linemen, other than J.J. Watt, the defensive linemen that they've brought into this organization have all been, not to harp on their little nickname that they've got for their group, but they've all been lunch pail guys. DJ Reader, probably a souped up lunch pail guy, but he was a fifth round pick in 2016, maybe underdrafted, but still a fifth round pick in 2016. DJ Reader, Angelo Blackson, Brandon Dunn, certainly. You know, Carlos Watkins, we'll see. You know, he's heading into his third year. He probably needs to start to show some things. But by and large, the defensive linemen that they brought in, other than J.J. Watt, have been guys who have required some coaching up to get from being just a fringe guy or a guy who's on his second or third team to being a guy you want to bring back on a contract, like they've done with Brandon Dunn and Angelo Blackson. And I wonder if Seth Menehue did some good things his rookie year, too. You brought him up. I do wonder if Anthony Weaver, in terms of going and getting a guy to provide that interior pass rush, if maybe they feel like, hey, we can get a guy in tier two or tier three of free agency and let Weaver do some of his, you know, let Weaver coach him up right, and get the guy to be, you know, get a tier two guy to be a tier one and a half guy, that kind of thing.
I think if you look at, say, Matt Judon from the Ravens, who was franchise tagged by the Ravens, I don't think Matt Judon is necessarily all that great a pass rusher, but he works really well in that scheme, and he's an athletic guy that has a knack for getting to the quarterback. So when the Ravens blitz, Judon takes advantage of it. And there's more to that than some people might think. I think sometimes you hear like, well, the Ravens blitzed a lot, and Judon didn't actually have to beat one-on-one pass protection all that much to actually get those sacks. It's not as simple as that. There are guys that can screw up an open and clear path to the quarterback. So I think that Jacob Martin might benefit the most from Anthony Weaver. Because Martin is a guy that I think the problem with Martin isn't that it's not his production, because I think he can produce. It's what does he do on the plays where he's not producing? Because he's a smaller guy, and sometimes he kind of gets swallowed up by offensive tackles. So if a quarterback scrambles, he's kind of stuck on a block because the offensive tackle has time to get a hold of him. Or if it ends up being a draw or a run, he has a hard time. So I think that with Anthony Weaver, if he is a little bit more aggressive in his play calling, a guy like Jacob Martin can get free and make plays on the quarterback more.
I would say on the offensive side of the ball, they still need a running back. I know they just traded DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and some other stuff. But given some of the overlap with Duke Johnson and David Johnson's skill set, and then just given the fact, I mean, McClain illustrated this earlier, who's their third running back right now? Caron Higdon? He was on the practice squad all year. You know, Buddy Howell, who I think you can count on one hand how many carries he has in an NFL regular season. I think I could see them shopping there. I could see them shopping there as well at that position.
I would be intrigued by Caron Higdon just because of the work he did in college. Yeah. Let me ask you this. And one of our listeners asked this earlier. Do you think even after trading for David Johnson and even after paying Duke Johnson and David Johnson as much money as they are, is there a chance they draft a running back in the second or third rounds? If like J.K. Dobbins is you never know with running backs how it's going to work out in the draft. You think J.K. Dobbins or maybe even Jonathan Taylor is a genuine option?
Yes. Well, in part because I think there's a chance that Bill O'Brien could do anything. Okay. Like that's like, I don't think there's anything that's off the board with Bill O'Brien. I think we've learned that, but I do think Seth, that would be a nice message to Deshaun Watson, that you're getting him sort of a top tier back to kind of partner him with as they head into what would hopefully be second contract with Deshaun Watson. And I don't trust either Duke Johnson or David Johnson to be a solution at running between the tackles, which is crazy to think that they could draft somebody who actually becomes the primary back and they're paying $18 million combined to their two situational backs. But this is the world we live in right now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know the other thing that happened the other day? It was the first day we were working remotely, and I've been hating myself for this ever since, is we had a little bit of a glitch, and I was trying to scramble, and I couldn't quite hear what you were asking me. And you asked if I would be intrigued by Everson Griffin, and I gave you an awful answer. I don't think he's necessarily a scheme fit, and I also think he's going to end up getting a good chunk of money. But the Vikings released Everson Griffin, or at the time, I think they were just talking about it. And I said something along the lines of that Everson Griffin wouldn't offer you more of a pass rush than the lunch pail crew you already have. And immediately, like, it was like the last segment we were doing, And immediately we went off the air and I'm like, what the hell did I just say? And I've been thinking about it for the last 5 days. I think Everson Griffin probably had 10 sacks last year. I don't know what overcame me, or if I was thinking of maybe some other guy that was named Everson like 10 years ago or something.
Right.
But I feel like I have to say, probably none of the people that were listening at that moment were also listening now. But if they are, I apologize to you. I apologize to the football gods. I apologize to Anthony Weaver if he was listening. Yes, Everson Griffin can provide some pass rush. Yes.
There you go. Seth, do you feel better?
I feel better. I feel a little bit better, except for the thing is, a lot of the people that caught that mistake that were listening a week ago, they're probably not listening right this moment, just randomly because their schedules have changed and everything, and they'll forever hold that against me, and it's going to drive
hopefully,
me insane.
Hopefully they heard it, and now you're that guy where they go, boy, I can't wait to hear what this guy says.
Yeah.
and they're tuning in for that. Boy, that's a hot take right there. Seth, I will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
All right, buddy, let's do it.
Let's do it again at 6 a.m., baby. We will do it again at 6 a.m. I want to thank Jonesy for getting through the first day of producing from a desk in his home. We are grinding it out here with you at home on Sports Radio 610. We appreciate you tuning in. In the Loop is up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.